by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the show Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, on a Tuesday, she's here and we take questions on lawn and garden care. Whatever might be on your mind, if it has to do with some plant that grows in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, grass, flowers, stuff you can eat, we can also take houseplant questions. If you're having a problem, you have a question, just give us a call and make sure you can tell us what kind of plant it is and give us the best description of the problem or, you know, whatever the question is. I know that Sandy will do her best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the number. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call for you, the number is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you have questions, you can call us, and we'll take as many as we can. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you.
So we've been sitting here talking that it's been sort of an odd summer. Mm-hmm. It's been hot, and it has been overall pretty dry with occasional deluges here and there. It seemed like it's nice. The rain that we've gotten, for example, just over the past weekend was fairly gentle over a number of days, but there also have been these times over the summer where if you got rain, you might have just gotten a torrential downpour. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, another one of these deals where across the street or the next field over, you know, they didn't you get anything. You could have gotten a couple of inches in an hour or something, and the neighbors don't get anything. So it's been pretty strange. Yeah.
I felt picked on.
Why? Because you got it or you didn't get it?
And I didn't get it.
Oh, you didn't get it.
It always went around me. I think there was some kind of bad karma there. I don't know.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about grass, turf grass, because also as we were talking here, we're getting into the point where we would be recommending that people, if they were going to do a fall fertilization, we're kind of getting to that point. We're also getting to the point where, and a normal, if it was sort of a normal year and we were expecting normal moisture and people wanted to reseed, we're also getting to that point. But we were just talking, you were just saying before we got going, if it continues to be as dry as it is, maybe you don't want to do either of those things.
I think that, you know, we are, at least when it comes to reseeding, and people may find, I was just talking to someone else about, you know, usually when we start getting a little rain, then the Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass will go ahead and green up. But there's areas I notice in my lawn, they're not greening up. So people may notice that part of their lawn has truly died this year. So they may want to think about reseeding. Normally we'd think of about mid-August to about mid-September is really an ideal time. It's early enough in the season, but yet late enough where hopefully we get some rains. But you know, you just have to realize that if you're going to do some reseeding and resodding, you're going to have to be watering them. And you're going to have to make sure, especially with reseeding, that you keep that seed bed moist. So you're going to have to, you know, water several times a day. And you really have to make that commitment if you're going to go that route. I wouldn't plan on Mother Nature helping us too much with that. The other thing as far as fertilization, normally, you know, if you don't fertilize any other time of year, normally we say early September is really your best time to fertilize. If you're just going to fertilize once, that's the time to do it. But we want to make sure that there's moisture out there. We want to make sure that the grass is actively growing so it can take advantage of that fertilizer. And if it's not, and if it's still hot and it's still dry, you may want to think about delaying that. We certainly can still fertilize when we come into October and then even into November. So it's not too late to do that, but you kind of have to keep that in mind. Same thing with weed control. If you're concerned about weed control and maybe late season you normally would put on a weed and feed to take care of those dandelions or whatever you have out there, but realize if, again, even if the weeds are not actively growing, even they shut down once in a while. If it's real hot and dry, they don't take up the herbicide properly and you don't get a good kill. So you may decide that you're just going to delay some of these things, maybe even into October.
Okay. So if you decided you were just bound and determined to do that, though, would it be okay if you watered yourself if it was not raining? Or would you just say, you really don't even want to get into that.
Yeah, it depends on the temperature. And if we start getting days where once we start getting above 85 degrees, that's kind of been considered the temperature where plants kind of start shutting down. They're not nearly as actively growing. For most plants, that's a difficult temperature for them once they get above 85. So if we get a stretch here where we're in the low 80s and you feel like you want to go ahead and water, I think that's fine. If we get into these 85, 90s, and hopefully we don't stay that way, but we may, you never know, and that may be a time where even watering may not be all that terribly helpful for you.
And then so it just to underscore what you said, if we continue to have those kind of conditions, it's not if we even wait until the beginning of October, that's not too late to do at least to do the fertilizer.
Certainly the fertilizer and weed and feed, both.
Both.
If you want to do a broadleaf herbicide at that time, you certainly can still do that in October. It's getting kind of late to do reseeding at that time. So we'd hope that maybe September will roll around and be a little nicer month for us and people can still reseed. You could resod at that time. Mm-hmm. It's not getting too late into that, but even with that, I'd be getting that done even in September. So,
okay. And this is the time if you're going to do control. I was talking just the other day with Phil Nixon. He was here. this is the time if you're going to do control for grubs. Mm-hmm. Now's the time.
You need to be checking for them. I mean, you definitely need to be checking for them. And, you know, because we haven't had a lot of rain, those lawns that have been watering the most are generally those are the lawns where the grubs are going to be. Mm-hmm. So you kind of that catch-22 thing. If you've been watering, you're more apt to get grubs. If you haven't been watering and your lawn's been basically dormant this season, you're probably not going to see too much in the way of grubs. Mm-hmm. So if you high-maintenance lawns, I'd definitely be checking for grubs.
All right. We have several callers here ready to go. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's here once a month. We talk about lawn and garden care. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. First caller is in Rentoul, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have a delphinium, one delphinium. I planted last year to see if I could grow them. And I planted beside my carport, and it bloomed beautifully this spring and summer. And now the new growth on it, the leaves have a yellow background with green veins. Mm-hmm. It's planted next to the concrete post for the carport. I'm wondering if it's got too alkaline. Mm-hmm. I also fertilized it early summer with a slow release. Supposed to be a 3 month and lightly. It's a 16-12-12 all purpose with micronutrients. And that's all I've done to it besides cut back the blossoms after they died.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a nutrient deficiency, especially if the veins are staying green. So you may want to think about maybe a fertilizer for acid-loving plants. Again, I wouldn't do that if we get temperatures much above 85. But thinking about doing something along those lines. And I assume you've been watering it.
It's been watered. It's been watered regularly.
Okay. They hate our summers. I don't know if you realize that. Or delphiniums not like
them. I came from Georgia where I cannot grow delphinium.
Yeah.
And I thought I would try it here, and I put it so it didn't get crosswinds. We have north-south crosswinds. Mm-hmm. I put it where it was sheltered from the wind, and it did very nicely. I was surprised it made it through last winter because mm-hmm. there was a lot of ice in that area. But I'm concerned. Do you think then it's probably a matter of being too alkaline there?
Possibly, or for one reason or another, maybe because of dryness or heat or whatever, it's experienced a nutrient deficiency. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely what it sounds like, either iron or magnesium.
So I should wait until it got cooler and fertilize it with an azalea fertilizer?
Yeah, something along those lines, and that really should bring it around.
Will it be all right then to fertilize it that late in the year?
That's not a problem. I wouldn't fertilize it much past September or so, right. But it shouldn't be a problem now.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good
right,
luck.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For the call. Next is someone in Bellflower on our toll-free line four. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have just put in a low deck, and I'm looking for suggestions for possibly some small shrubs that you think would do well there. I'm hoping to get something that would have some color in the fall, but not get out of hand too easily.
Mm-hmm. Is this full sun or shade?
It's full sun, except for very early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as fall color, kind of depends on what you're looking for. There's some smaller forsythia, if you like that, certainly as the spring flowers, and they do have a yellow fall color in there. I would definitely look for the shorter ones or some shorter cultivars that you might find good for that. Even some of the smaller red twig dogwoods are kind of nice. You get, color from those twigs in the winter times. You get a little bit of show. There's another plant, if you're able to give it enough moisture, that's called an itea. That's I-T-E-A. Probably the one, most popular one is probably Henry's Garnet, and it has a beautiful fall color, kind of a reddish maroon fall color, very pretty. But it does need moisture, so it's not one where you can just sort of sit it out there and let it, you know, really bake in the sun. So it full sun is fine, it just needs some moisture. So if you're able to do that, you may find that helpful.
Oh, I think that sounds very nice.
Mm-hmm. And you may find, and depending on the height of your deck there are some smaller cultivars of, like, the Korean spice viburnum. You may find that some of those will work for you. Now, those will probably get, even the compact ones may get 5 or 6 feet, so that may be a bit too tall for you.
That might be a little tall.
Yeah, that might be a bit tall. So that might be some, is sort of really just walking through some of the garden centers. I think you'll be surprised at the, because everybody's in kind of the same boat. We're all looking for these smaller shrubs, so that might be a few options for you.
Well, thank you so much.
All right,
sure.
Thanks. Goodbye. It seems that there are a fair number of shrubs that do grow very large that are available in dwarf varieties. If you like a particular thing, often they do come smaller, so that they won't get that big.
Right, and more we're finding that a lot of these shrubs, you can just cut them down to the ground, say after they bloom, and then they won't get quite so tall. And if you actually do that every year, then you can keep them smaller. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that's a little maintenance thing, but actually, they can be manipulated to some extent by doing those kinds of things. But yeah, you got to look at the mature height unless you're willing to prune them once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. Champagne, the next caller, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got three quick questions. The first one is crabgrass. I heard what the guest said about reseeding, but I noticed a lot of crabgrass in my lawn. What does she recommend? Should I pull it out and reseed? Should I put some kind of herbicide on it? What should I do with the crabgrass?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one thing about crabgrass, it's an annual grass, so it has to come back every year from seed. So usually how we combat it is in the spring, we put down a pre-emergent crabgrass control.
Okay.
And that seems to be a little bit better thing. You sort of, you know, any of them that you can get rid of now just by pulling them out, that's great, because then you won't have quite so many seeds. But generally, it's a little bit more effective just to try and use a pre-emergent next spring.
Okay. My next question is, on the north side of my house, I have a holly and a serviceberry right next to each other. And they're both been in the ground for a long time. And when I got back from vacation, they both appeared to be dead. And I'm not sure if they just died from the drought, which would surprise me because the north side of the house is fairly moist, or if they were attacked by Japanese beetles. And I wanted to ask you, how could I tell which is which, and what should I do in either case?
Mm-hmm. Well, Japanese beetles, I don't think they certainly would attack serviceberries. I don't think they attack hollies.
Okay.
I'd be very surprised if they attacked hollies. But Japanese beetle has a very distinctive damage. They tend to eat so that they leave the veins. So
right.
All the leaves are there, but they have this sort of lacy appearance
right.
to them. It's very characteristic with those guys. So usually you can figure that out fairly quickly.
I think that's what happened to the serviceberry.
Yeah, certainly with a serviceberry, I would not be surprised by that. The holly, I would be a bit surprised. I don't think they go on to holly. So I guess with the holly, what I wonder about, they certainly are ones that do not like dry soils, but you feel like that's been moist enough that's not a problem?
I can't tell. There's another holly, you know, 20 feet away from it that's thriving on the same side of the house, so I just don't know.
You might do a little bit of investigation. Are you sure it's dead, or just sort of dead?
I'm not sure it's dead. It looks pretty bad, though.
What I would do is just take your thumbnail and just scrape the stems a little bit and see if there's any green under there. Because sometimes, you know, they'll go through, you know, maybe a drought or wind or something, and the leaves look horrible, but the stems are still very much alive. So I would check that and make sure that the stems aren't still green, in which case there's always a chance that it might leaf out this year, but certainly maybe next year. So I'd check that, number one. The other thing, I'd do a little bit of investigation, maybe look at the base of the plant. Did you plant these, or did somebody else plant them? You planted them. So you're pretty confident that there wasn't any problem as far as leaving string on or anything like that that might girdle the roots? Or
no, I was pretty compulsive about it.
That's what I like to hear. But that would be one thing I'd also kind of look at. They certainly don't like too wet of soils, but that certainly, unless you really left the water on and it was a very, very clayey site, I don't imagine that happening this year.
If I'm not sure that it's dead, should I cut it back and see what happens next year?
Actually, I would just leave it.
Leave the whole thing.
Just I would just leave it. I would take off anything that you know is dead. That's obviously dead. You can prune that off. But, you know, we just have to keep in mind that those stems, as long as those stems are green, that's a source of food for the plant. You know, that's stored food reserves. So if you can leave that on as much as possible, that gives the plant maybe a little bit extra food reserve when it comes to releafing. So I would wait until you know it's dead before I actually go ahead and remove any of the branches. I know it looks probably funny and it looks bad, and you can take the leaves off maybe if it concerns you how it looks. But
and on
I'd
that
wait.
Service berry, if it is beetles, should I treat it now or just leave it?
At this point, the beetles are pretty well gone, so they've done what they're going to do, and most of the time, it's not life-threatening for the plants. I know it looks horrible, and I hate seeing it, but it's generally not life-threatening. They usually come out of it.
Okay, my last question is, I have by my lamppost a tall grass, and I think it's called Sioux bluegrass or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what I would like to have is a nice clump of it right by my lamppost. But it's not doing very well. I only have 3 sprigs right now. And I'm wondering, what can I do to make it clump, you know, make the clump propagate better? Should I take some of the seeds from it and plant them in the ground right near the base of it? Or should I, you know, move the, I have a ground cloth around it to prevent weeds from growing up. Should I tear that away so that more sprigs can come up? How can I encourage that Sioux bluegrass to propagate and spread and make a nice clump?
Yeah, usually you don't have too much trouble with those, to be honest with you, once they get established. I definitely would take the ground cover cloth, whatever you have. I'd take that away from it,
okay.
Make sure that it has plenty of room to spread. And then if you want to go ahead and fertilize it, certainly, again, the whole thing we've been talking about before as far as making sure it's not too hot and all that good stuff. But actually just fertilizing and watering is going to be your best bet.
And remove the cloth.
And remove that cloth.
Great.
And then it'll grow. They actually grow fairly fast.
Well, thank you very, very much for all your advice.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call. We have someone else here. The next person is in Whiteheath, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a lot of pine needles, well, because of the pine trees. But what's happening, especially this year, is the weeds are taking over, and I don't want the weeds there. And because I think it brings mosquitoes and that kind of stuff. So I'd rather have it just pine needles, but the weeds are just going crazy. What could I do to eliminate? I pulled a whole bunch of weeds, and then when we got all this moisture now, the little bit of moisture we did get over the summer, the weeds just went nuts over it. So how would I get rid of the weeds besides pulling them all? It doesn't seem to be effective.
Mm-hmm. And this is underneath the pine trees you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess a couple of things. Have you considered maybe putting in some ground covers or something else to sort of help?
I have ground covers in some parts of that, but this is a big, big area. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have it all covered with green. I'd rather have just the pine needles because I think it brings in mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you let the pine needles just stay when they fall?
Yes.
Because usually that's thick enough that it chokes out most of the weeds.
Well, some of these weeds have learned how to cope. I'm sure.
Very tricky, those weeds.
Really, when you least expect it. I guess the one thing would be if we knew what kind of weeds they were, it might help. Sounds like they may be perennials, as in they're coming back from the root. And even when you pull them, they're coming back with the root.
Yeah. These viney things that they crawl underneath the pine needles and they spread out all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Could be bindweed or any number of things. I suppose.
Or Texas, some kind of creeper. Somebody said once.
Creeping Charlie?
Creeper.
No, Texas creeper, Arkansas creeper, or one of those state creepers. I don't know.
You got to watch those states,
the
too.
State creeper, yeah.
Or Virginia creeper.
Oh, maybe Virginia creeper.
Yes,
well, that's not a weed, but some people think that
it
would say it was
a
nuisance plant.
Yeah.
Some people actually like it. It's one of those things that if you can keep it controlled, some people like it because it grows in the shade. But it will grow up over stuff, and it'll get out of control.
Yeah,
really,
I've got ground cover that it's growing. You know, it just takes over if you let it go.
Probably, I guess you probably have a couple options. One would be you're going to have to choke it out somehow. Obviously, it doesn't look all that great, but you could even use something like black plastic, something along those lines, where you just leave it long enough to actually kill off the weeds, like maybe for one season, and then I take it off. off because it's not good for the trees. But it's a pretty good method for sort of choking things out. So actually using black plastic. I've also used and had this to be somewhat effective is actually use several layers of newspapers and put your pine needles back on top of it. And I don't know with Virginia creeper, it's such a woody plant that I don't know about that one. That might be a little bit tough, but I have, with some weeds, I found that to be somewhat effective too. And if you're not opposed to herbicides, you certainly could use an herbicide on these particular plants as well. If there's nothing else under there that you want to keep, then any of the non-selective type herbicides would help too.
And what does that mean, non-selective?
Non-selective would be something like glyphosate, which is sold as Roundup. Usually.
Oh, okay.
And that would be, as long as you don't spray it on anything you want to keep, it's not going to be a problem for the tree because it doesn't go into the soil like that. So,
what about the wildlife, or like birds and stuff like that?
Well, as with anything, you'd want to try to keep things off. Once it dries, there's not a problem.
Oh, okay.
So as long as you keep animals and stuff off of it until
during,
it dries.
Do it during a dry period? Or what?
Well, you just want to make sure, again, you don't want to use it when it's too hot outside. I wouldn't use it when you think it's going to rain within the next couple of hours. And if you just read the label, it'll give you all those kind of distinctions on it. And just make sure it's not too windy, those kinds of things.
Okay.
So there's certainly, as in with any pesticide, you need to make sure you read the label and follow the label directions.
Would that kill that Virginia creeper?
It should. Probably what I would do with that, if you have some really, really woody vines, I would probably cut one of them, cut it down as far as I can, and then actually paint on the herbicide right on it, the cut surface, and it's labeled as a cut surface treatment.
Okay.
And so you may find that that's helpful.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
I didn't know if
Good
I
luck.
Should try that Roundup or not, because it might be sort of, I don't know, hurt the rest of the stuff, but...
As long as you follow label directions, keep it off of anything you want to keep, those kind of things, it shouldn't be a problem for you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank
you. Bye.
Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions or maybe you have some sort of problem, you're not quite sure how to solve it, give us a call, and Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And here's someone else to talk with in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about, I have a perennial flower, Pinks, and I don't know which variety it is, but it's got the real grassy clump, and then there's several sprouts with pink flowers on the top.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, when should I divide those? Because I know that they can be difficult to divide and spread up, but they're getting huge.
Well, that's good. They must be happy. usually with most of perennials, and those included, September is a good time. And some folks like to wait until next season, like mid-April to May, somewhere along those.
Well,
so it kind of depends on you. I wouldn't do it much later than September. You really want to make sure that you give them a chance to get established before winter comes.
Right. I'd like to do it sooner so that I can, because they're so big now, if I wait until spring, I never know
even
how big
bigger.
They're going to be. Thank you. I have a second question about quack grass.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that in your lawn? It's not, because I know the most weed killers don't affect it.
Yeah. The problem is it's a perennial grassy weed, and so it's very difficult to find anything that's going to kill it and not also kill your grass.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't have anything selective that's going to select for it and not also kill your good grass. So that's the unfortunate part. It's probably one of the most difficult weeds to get rid of. I will tell you.
Great.
Lucky you. So you have a couple options, I suppose. You could live with it and then deal with it as it comes into perennial beds and stuff, because it will run into beds.
Right.
The only other thing you could do is either you could try and pull it out, but the problem is what you'll find is that it snaps and all those little white, big white roots just stay there and it pops back up again. So your other bet would be if you truly wanted to get rid of, about the only thing you can do is to hit those areas with something like Roundup, one of the non-selective herbicides, and wait for it all to die and then come back in and reseed or resod, because it definitely will kill your good grass as well, but we just don't have too many other options, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have some other folks here ready to go, and let's see who we'll talk with next. Someone in Champaign, I believe, line number one. Hello.
Yes?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a pumpkin question. Pumpkin vines are growing well and lots of blossoms. And to the blossom, after they blossom and open up, when they close, they fall off and don't make any fruit.
Mm-hmm, So are you actually, can you tell if you're actually getting male flowers and female flowers both? Because female flowers, even when they haven't been pollinated, actually have a little bit of a bulbous area right behind the flower.
Oh, I haven't looked.
I'd look close because they have male and female flowers, and so you may be seeing the male flowers and maybe just don't have female flowers yet. You should by now, I would think. And then the other thing would be whether they're getting pollinated properly.
Okay.
You know, have you seen bees and stuff around there or something that would pollinate them properly?
Yeah, I don't know whether we got any bees in the neighborhood or not.
Well, you may have to act like your own little bee. Because you can actually pollinate them yourself if you want to. Just find the male flowers. You'll see the white, the yellow kind of, you know, powdery stuff, the pollen. And then you can go ahead and actually pollinate the female flowers yourself.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call. And we'll go next to somebody here on cell phone, line number 3. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi. Quick question about some storm damage to a cherished dogwood. We had a large oak that fell down just a couple weeks ago in one of the past storms, top heavy. And when it landed on three Coosa dogwoods.
Mm.
Anyway, one of them, when we finally removed the large tree, the Coosa was bent and snapped at the bottom. But it still, what we did is we then put it back up into its original shape and have it staked. But is it a loss, or is there anything that we might be able to do to actually repair the injured area?
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to, how big a tree are these, the dogwoods? How big around
actually,
were they?
The dogwoods were about 10 years old, so they were nice specimens.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And then when you say it snapped, you actually saw the interior bark when it snapped?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you put the part that snapped back and connected it with the other part? Is that what you ended up doing?
I'm trying to visualize all this. It bent down so much that you could see the snapped interior, but the all sides of the trunk actually were still remaining. So we kind of pushed it all back up, braced it, and, you know, have it, you know, braced up into position.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that the interior of it, it has been snapped and damaged. So we're just trying to figure out if it might live, if we can, you know, add anything internally to it, you know.
When did this happen? You said a week or so ago?
About 3 weeks ago, after we had such a real long rain. This is actually on some properties we have up in Kankakee.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of the storms that hit up there, but not down here.
Okay. And how do the leaves look now on that particular tree? Are they still green?
They're still green.
Oh, well, then I'd say that's a really good sign. I know this is going to sound really funny, and if you watch Red Green, you'll think I'm making this up, but actually what I have done is actually duct tape, the handyman's secret weapon. And I have done, if the inner bark didn't dry out too much, it is possible to sort of bring that. Now, you can do it on a young tree. A big, mature tree gets much harder, obviously. Duct tape isn't going to hold. But where you can actually put them back together again, if it hasn't dried out too much. And I have seen that, actually. I've done it myself, where it actually sort of eventually sort of heals over. Now, you have to really watch the duct tape, and you want to make sure you take it off in the fall. You know, really, because otherwise it'll end up girdling the tree. And then I would say if those leaves stay green, I'd say you have a really good chance that it's going to survive. So your best bet now is just good maintenance kinds of things, you know, water during drought. You may want to think about fertilizing either late this fall or next spring, those kind of things, just to try and encourage it. And it'll tell you real quick whether this is going to work or not, because that half of the tree will just die.
Okay, well, that's some pointers. And
yeah,
we'll
good luck.
Fingers and toes crossed.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. Who knew? Sandy Mason and Red Green. I never would have thought.
Handyman's secret weapon.
Yeah, that's right. You make a lovely couple. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. We'll take questions about lawn and garden care, and we'll get as many as we possibly can in the time that remains. And we'll go next over to talk with somebody in Kokomo on line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a mushroom question this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Under my euonymus bushes in the edge of the lawn, and it's a shaded area, under ground cover, I have thousands and thousands of mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, they looked like a little, like you'd spilled a bag of perlite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Today, they're a little bit bigger, and they're beginning to turn slightly brown. Now, this has happened before, and in mm-hmm. 2 days, they had vanished completely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, they're back. What do I have?
Well, you have little mushrooms. And I've noticed this around my own yard. So the conditions must have just been right for this particular one, because it sounds like the same mushroom I have in mine, and it's just growing off of the mulch. And that isn't terribly uncommon. And usually, you know, the fungus need a certain amount of moisture. And so once we get these little rains, the temperature's right, then they'll do this, you know, the mushrooms will pop out. But like you say, usually in a couple of days, they're gone.
Okay.
So it's not a problem for the plants. There's nothing going on. It's just they're truly growing off of that decomposing wood chips or whatever that might be there. So
well,
it's not a big deal.
There's no mulch, but there's other miscellaneous stuff on the ground. I've never seen this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this year I've seen so many of these little bitty ones, and they're like all, like you say, overnight, they pop up. They're all over the place. The next couple of days, they're gone.
Okay.
So there must be something that's just right about those.
Okay, thank you very mm-hmm. much.
All right, thank Bye. You. And let's go to line one, Champagne, next. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know, how can I prevent plants and stuff from growing up in my brick patio?
Hmm.
My idea was to spray it with vinegar.
Hmm. Well, actually, they do have the one thing, you'll see vinegar listed as an herbicide.
Uh-huh.
A couple things. The homeowner type vinegar is not the strength that was actually studied to be found to be found as a good herbicide. So I will tell you that. But I think they've actually come out with a product now that actually is a higher concentration of vinegar and actually does a pretty good job when the weeds are quite small.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So once they get going, then it's a little bit harder. But you certainly can use a product like that. There's some other, actually, I think Safers actually makes a particular herbicide that's actually made out of soap. That also kills them off. And those are great for these little seedlings that pop up.
Right.
They usually just kill off the top part of, say, a weed that's really big and has a big root system. But they're really quite good for things like these little bitty seedlings.
Right. And I'm concerned that they're safe for animals.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about actually both of these products. And again, you'd always want to make sure it dries before you let animals or kids or whatever walk
right.
barefoot or whatever on them. But once it dries, it's not an issue. And then if you can get those little seedlings before they set more seed, that's going to be one of your big things too.
Right, so do it first thing in the spring.
Yeah, and just keep on it. Just really keep on it. And you may find the first year or so you just really have to spray quite a bit. But then hopefully once that seed bank sort of lessens, you won't have nearly the problem.
Is it possible for you to give me a name of one of those products, or is that not?
Well, I think Safers is one of the brand names, and I think they actually make one that's a soap. The vinegar product, I'm not sure what label that's come out on, but you might be able to, if you have internet access, you might want to do an internet search for vinegar herbicide.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you. And to Monticello, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with ivy. I had it put down in an area where it was very shady, and I have a hedge on one side of my yard, and the ivy is growing into the hedge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how I can, I'm afraid it's going to choke the hedge out, and I'm wondering how I can put a barrier. Is there a way to put a barrier up or a way to kill the ivy that goes mm-hmm. over there without hurting the hedge?
Yeah, I guess, now what kind of a hedge is it?
I don't think it's a pivot hedge because the leaves are a little bit softer. It grows regularly and I have to trim it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, usually, even if the ivy kind of goes over the base of the plant, it more than likely is not going to be a problem for the hedge. I will tell you that. It really is. If it starts smothering it, then obviously there's an issue there. But if it's just sort of going through the hedge and around it and maybe over the crown of the plant, that's probably not going to be a big issue for the hedge itself. So I will tell you that. The other thing, that really, as far as a boundary or anything, I think you're going to find that's a little bit difficult unless you actually put something in the ground. And you'd have to stick up probably at least 8 or 10 inches. It's going to have to stick up because that ivy grows right over the top of it.
But it wouldn't over 8 or 10 inches?
It shouldn't over that. If you sort of keep it cut back at that point,
uh-huh.
And that would sort of help you. Otherwise, the other thing I was going to say is that just to keep it cut back and actually use like an edge trimmer or something like that to sort of keep it cut back away from the hedge.
Okay.
But I'm afraid it just has a tendency to sort of keep growing.
Yeah, it does. It gets really thick. So is the only way I can control it is to get in there and pick it up and clip it off?
That would be your best bet, unless, as I said, you use some sort of like an edger or something along those lines. It would probably cut through it if you had it at like an electric edger, you know,
uh-huh.
what I mean, that would edge beds and stuff. That should cut through it.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. Thank you very mm-hmm. much.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. One of the things I was thinking about asking you, and I don't know what kind of thought you might have like right off the top of your head, but I was thinking about the fact that now it's late summer, and a lot of people's yards and gardens, stuff's starting to look a little tired.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Annual flowers are still going to produce blossoms, but then there would have been a lot of stuff that maybe would have flowered some time back. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that really stands out in your mind as being a really attractive late bloomer, something that I know, for example, hosta will do this. There are some that bloom late. Mm-hmm. And in our yard, we have an anemone, which mm-hmm. is blooming now. Anything that doesn't bloom until, say, you get into mm-hmm. August mm-hmm. at the end of the summer that sort of stands out in your mind if somebody was looking for something that would, you know, when everything else is sort of winding down and tired and having flowered already, what's just at this point really getting going?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things, and I was just up at the Chicago Botanic Garden, they have an evaluation trial of Joe Pieweed, which is tall. And I mean, it can be fairly tall, but it's just now flowering, and it's absolute glory. It just looks beautiful, kind of a pinkish flower. And you really have to watch the sizes, because even some of the smaller ones will get, you know, 4 or 5 feet. But it's a great background plant. Butterflies love it. So that's just a super plant. Certainly asters. There's lots of different asters now, and some of them actually bloom about now. Some of them will bloom a little bit later. So that's always kind of, you know, one of those plants that really fits in well for that kind of late season stuff. And those are probably a couple of them that would be easy to find at this point. I think a lot of garden centers will still have
them. The problem
those.
With asters, bunnies like them.
Yeah, they do.
I have like had this. I had some planted a couple of years ago, and the first year they did great, and the next year when they started to come up in the springtime, the rabbits, they just mowed them down.
And the poor
things just died because the rabbits wouldn't leave them alone.
Yeah, sometimes I've noticed if you can at least cover them for that first year or so, then they leave them alone. Like they did that with mine, and now they never touch the asters. I don't know what's going on there, but it's something about newness, I've decided. Uh-huh. But the other thing is I found that they actually were trimming them off, and that helped them to be a little bit more compact. They're actually doing me a favor because the asters stayed smaller, which is a good technique for anybody, is to trim them back early in the season. Then they stay smaller and they don't flop over and do all those kind of other things. But you're right, that rabbits do absolutely love them. So you kind of have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I won't say any more about the rabbits.
I know. Don't go there.
Oh, well, we have several callers. The lines are full. We have somebody here on a cell phone. They're in Savoy. Line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Ivy has a very strong, I don't know what you call it, a line, and you can grab it, and then you can pull up all the ivy the way you could do that with ivy that grows on your house. And some of these ivies are very sort of fragile, and when you're going to pull it up, or you get it to one leaf. Well, I have a backyard that's completely covered with zinca.
Oh.
It's beautiful. And my wife says that what we have on it is Virginia creeper, and it's covered the entire zinca. You can't see it.
Yeah.
When I try to pull it up, all that I get is one leaf at a time coming off. So there's no, I don't know what to do about that. Mm-hmm. It's like there's this treasure underneath. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to get rid of the? I think it's Virginia creeper. That's what my wife says.
Mm-hmm.
Without killing the zinca too.
Well, you'd have to be very careful with it, obviously. It's one of those things you're going to have to follow it back and see where it's actually coming from. Because it's generally a woody vine, and actually can get quite woody at the very end of it. So just sort of keep following it back. And you may find, even though that's a huge vine, there may be only popping up one spot. So you may find you can dig it at that point.
Backyard backs into the Lake of the Woods Forest Preserve.
Oh, it's probably coming out of there as well.
Yeah.
So that may be a little bit more difficult for you, but somewhere along the line you need to follow it back. What you could also do is that as long as you protect the vinca, I would go ahead and put down plastic or something over the vinca. You actually could go ahead and just cut the Virginia creeper, as I mentioned before, and then go ahead and use one of the non-selective herbicides like Roundup, and you actually paint it right on that cut surface. And that will help to kill the root, which is really one of your big problems, is the roots just, because it has a big root, it just keeps coming back and back and back.
We tried that and just killed everything. We just couldn't separate the...
You have to protect what you want to keep. I mean, you have to make sure that the spray does not go on what you want to keep. So you have to put black plastic over it, and then you have to wait until the spray dries, and then you can remove the plastic.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right.
Either that or digging out. Unfortunately, that's about your only options.
Okay. Let's go to Champaign here for our next caller. Line number two. Hello.
Hi. I have a problem with volunteer trees. Mulberries primarily, but some of the soft maples as well. And cutting them, of course, doesn't really work because they just come right back bushier than they were before. I've used Roundup on the young ones, and that seems to kill them if I get them early enough. Mm-hmm. But once they get to a certain size, they don't want to die. I'm trying to figure out the best way to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they are in an area where you can spray them, you could also use something like what's called Brush Begone.
Oh.
And that might be, it's a little different herbicide than Roundup is, and that you may find that's a little bit more effective on some of these trees. Again, read it, you know, use it according to label directions, protect anything that you don't want sprayed. I think that's also listed as a cut surface treatment, and that's one of the nice things. You could actually cut it and then paint on the spray, and then you can just really make it a very judicial spraying where it's just one spot, and you don't have to worry quite so much about it, you know, going to someplace where you don't want.
Okay. So. Would that be harmful to animals? The Brush Begone, or is it something that when it dries, it's okay?
It's like the same kind of thing. Just use it according to label directions, and then certainly keep anything away from it until the spray dries.
Okay. And burdock is another one of my issues. I spray it if I get it early in the season. I'm okay, but by the time it gets away from me. Would cutting it and then painting the surface, would that be the best way with Roundup?
You may find that's a little bit more effective, but I think you've hit on the one thing. It's much more effective if you can get them when they're smaller.
Yeah.
They do have a really big taproot, so you know you could do something where you dig it out as best you can, and then when it resprouts, then actually use an herbicide at that time. You may find that's a little bit more effective.
Yeah, sometimes if I mow it and then when it starts to come back, then I can get it when it's just coming back.
When it gets that lush growth going out. But you may find fall is actually a pretty good time to take care of those, as in October or so. It's a pretty good time to take care of those really hard to kill weeds.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Good luck.
Okay. Someone here on cell phone near Danville, the next caller, line three. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
Hey, I have a question that involves alfalfa. We are building a home in the country, and we have a couple acres, and it right now is all alfalfa. How can we get rid of the alfalfa to be able to plant a lawn?
I think probably one of the things you might do is, when are you planning on doing this next spring? Or?
Actually soon, because the house is almost done, probably in the October timeframe is when we'll be moving in.
Well, actually, alfalfa is a pretty good green cover crop. We actually sort of till it in, and you just work it into the soil and actually use it as a kind of a green manure.
Okay.
So you could try, go ahead and do that, and then you'd want to, of course, grade and stuff after at that point. And you may find that's helpful, and that's actually a good way to help fertilize the soil.
So just kind of till it in, and then use it kind of almost a compost itself.
Right. They call them green manure crops, but actually that's...
Okay,
you may find that's helpful.
Because I know our neighbors have had problems with it keep growing back.
Oh, really? I don't wonder how they started out.
I know that our one neighbor, they graded the whole lot and then planted grass, but it's alfalfa coming back up in too.
Yeah, you really have to till it in, as in, you go down 8 inches or so, like you're truly tilling it in.
Okay. So. And then just kind of, and it should actually probably help the soil to grow better,
yep.
et cetera.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
And you could always till it in, and then if you're really concerned about it coming back, you could wait, because you want the green part to actually decompose. You'd actually wait, and if you see any of them popping up, then you can sort of deal with it if you're really, really concerned that it might pop up. But even after that, I would think you could use a broadleaf herbicide to get rid of it.
Okay. And it doesn't really bother me too much. I mean, as long as it's not overwhelming on the property. If there's some still, that's fine.
I think it's pretty.
I just don't like the ruddiness. You know, when you have little kids running, it's kind of ruddy, and I don't want to put the ankle, so well, thank you so much.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Next caller is in Indiana, and this is line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have about 10 3-foot hibiscus in pots, and this is the first summer that I've gotten them, and I'm wondering, what am I going to do in the winter?
Buy a greenhouse.
Besides that.
Find somebody else with a greenhouse. This would be a really good excuse to get a greenhouse. There you go. But you're going to have to bring them in.
Uh-huh.
And what you can do, since they're so tall, you could do some trimming on them. I wouldn't do severe pruning at this time, but you could do some trimming on them and then bring them in. And if you can find some place where there's at least some light, they may not look all that great during the wintertime unless you have some higher light, but they'll hang on and they'll be fine. And then you can pull them out next spring and then they'll recover and be okay. So you certainly could do that if you want to. They do have some problems once you bring them indoors. They can get some spider mite issues and aphids, and so you kind of, they're not completely problemless, if I could say it that way. But there's no reason why you can't bring them in and just grow them as a houseplant.
Oh, okay. Is there anything I could do to prevent the bugs? Like maybe a water with like a very mild detergent or something before I bring them in?
You could certainly use something like insecticidal soap or something on it, where you spray them down, or maybe just even a heavy stream of water is actually pretty good for getting some things off, and just really, really do that. And usually I try to drench the soil too, because sometimes there'll be ants or sow bugs and stuff that like to take up residence in the soil itself. And so usually I just keep drenching the pot, and then you can see if you actually have any bugs coming out of the pot as well.
Uh-huh.
And then bring them in.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I wouldn't wait much later, Pat. 45 degrees is like absolute lowest you'd ever want to go with those guys.
So probably September?
September is a good time.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And again, here we've got another caller, Urbana Line 2. Hello.
Hi. With regard to burdock, it's a biennial. So after it sets seeds, in its second year of life, that plant will die.
But then you have a zillion seeds.
Right.
So you never want it to go to seed.
Yeah, well, but I'm wondering whether it might be possible. I haven't tried this where we've got burdock because I've been working on garlic mustard. But I'm wondering whether it might be possible to chop off the seed heads, let those plants die, and then you have the next year's plants to worry about. But
I don't think it works that way, to be honest with you. Because I've tried that before, and actually the plant just keeps coming back. It like really, really wants to flower.
Are you sure it's the same plant?
I'm absolutely sure it's the same plant, because you can't miss them. They're so big. I mean, that's been my experience. Now, maybe people have found that they do absolutely die, but I have not found that to be the case. So, sometimes biennials aren't truly biennials. So, but you're right. But you definitely do not want them to go to seed.
Right.
That was my big mistake.
I'm also wondering, the real reason I'm calling is I've managed to kill my rosemary plant again. And I seem to do this about every 1.5 years. It's really inconvenient now because I can't find any rosemary plants. Has anybody seen a rosemary plant around so I can buy it to bring inside for the winter?
Wow.
I really like fresh rosemary, and I've just found another recipe to use it in, and I want to use it.
Yeah. Well, usually they do become available usually around Christmas time. I don't know if that helps you any, but generally I've found them more and more. They prune them into topiary-looking thing, Christmas trees and stuff. So you may find that a little later in the season you actually can find one, but I haven't seen any for sale right now.
Okay.
So maybe later. But all thanks right. for the idea about the burdock. That's certainly something to think about.
Thanks for the call. Before we find ourselves out of time here, would you like to talk a little bit about any upcoming events?
Well, we have a couple of programs coming up at the Idea Garden, which is on South Lincoln, just south of the corner of Florida and Lincoln in Urbana. And on August 27th, Jim Schmidt, who's a U of I Extension specialist, is going to be talking about the tall and short of it, border binders. So, you know, flowers in the mm-hmm. in the borders. He's going to be talking about that, so that'll be fun. And that's at 11 o'clock on August 27th at the Idea Garden. And then September 10th, I'm going to be doing a program on Weed Them and Reap. Learn how to effectively ID and manage yep. lawn and garden weeds, because that's a lot of our problem is we don't know whether, just what we were talking about with burdock, we don't know whether the weed's an annual, perennial, or whatever. So getting proper identification makes a big difference when it comes to how we might treat them or manage them. So that's going to be September 10th, 11 o'clock at the Idea Garden.
Hmm. In terms of, it's maybe a little bit soon to start thinking about end of season cleanup, but mm-hmm. I guess I'm wondering for those things that have already bloomed, between now and frost, when things are truly dead, and when do you suggest that basically people wait until we actually have a frost and things clearly have died off? If something is still green and growing, leave it alone?
Yeah, your best bet with perennials is if it's still green and growing, you certainly can deadhead it and maybe clean right. it up so it looks a little bit nicer. But, you know, that's how the plant produces food reserves for next year. And so, especially in the fall, that's when they're starting to really put down those storage, you know, storing more food for the winter, you know, those kind of things. And so that's not really a time to be pruning them back. So wait until they die down natural. Now, if you've got annuals or something, you may decide you just want to go ahead and pull them out because they're just looking really lousy right now. And I think what we're going to find is that more and more of the gardens centers are actually having plants there that you can replace these with, you know, things like pansies and some of the fall blooming kinds of things. So you may want to start thinking about that to the point where, you know, I'm going to get rid of this and add something that looks a little bit nicer.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Here. Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month on a Tuesday, usually on the third Tuesday. And I think this month we had to change it.
It's usually the second Tuesday.
I'm sorry, it's usually the second Tuesday. It was supposed to have been last week.
Yes, but I was gone.
But so next week, next month, I don't know when it's going to be.
Second Tuesday.
All right, second Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Just tune in. They'll find us.
All right. Programming here on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Support for the broadcast is also provided by the Mahomet Chamber of Commerce, presenting the second annual Sangamon River Arts Festival, Saturday, August 20th. From 10 in the morning to 7, and Sunday the 21st from 11 to 4, there'll be musicians, dancers, performers, and artists exhibiting artworks in painting, drawing, ceramics, jewelry, and more. Also a children's art activity on both days. Enter the WILO sweepstakes today. You could win the $2,000 grand prize shopping spree plus design services from Carter's Furniture, or the $2,000 garden grand prize from Country Arbors. Also an exquisite area rug, elegant window treatments, a lawn vac, and more. Send in your entry by August 18th and you'll be eligible to win the early bird prize. That's a $250 gift certificate from Tepper Electric to lighten and brighten your home. If you need an entry form, we'll send you one. Just give us a call, 217-333-1070. Don't wait. Send in your entry form today. We're going to take a break. We'll have news and update on the market, so stay tuned.